Now, our theme today is making difficult choices. Our next guest made some very critical choices to save this country's largest city from financial ruin after his predecessor, John Lindsay, ran the city into bankruptcy. Ed Koch, who was born in 1924, is a lawyer, a politician, and a political commentary, and he was a United States senator before being the three-term mayor of New York City from 1978 to 1989. He also gained some popular notoriety as the judge on the People's Court from 1997 to 1999. He was born into a conservative Jewish family in Newark, New Jersey, and his father worked in the theater. He quickly made the transition out of the army into politics, where he became the U.S. Democratic representative from New York's 17th Congressional District. He then continued on his political path to become mayor of New York City. He describes the beginning of his political career as being a just plain liberal, but later in his career, he said he was a liberal with a conscience. Welcome to the show, Ed Koch. Well, welcome to the show, Ed Koch. How are you today?
I'm in good shape.
Oh, good. I'm happy to hear that. Well, first of all, I have to tell you a story. I was coming in and I told somebody that you were going to be my guest today. He's a former New Yorker, lives out here in California, and he turned to me and he said that you absolutely saved the city. After John Lindsay had run it into the ground, you were the one who helped turn it around. So, first of all, let me thank you for your years of public service, not only as the mayor, but also in the House of Representatives.
Right.
I'm always fascinated to know what drew you into politics.
Well, I started actually in 1956 when I moved to Greenwich Village, and I joined an organization supporting Adlai Stevenson, who was then the Democratic candidate for president.
Yes.
Probably your listeners don't even remember who he is.
Oh, on the contrary, my listeners know exactly who he is. That's the demographic that we're going to.
Oh, that's very, very good. But in any event, he lost. he ran 4 years later, and he lost again. And we are lucky he lost. Eisenhower won, and Eisenhower, in retrospect, made a far better president than Adlai was probably capable of, who was a great thinker, but wasn't able to get things done.
He was more of an intellectual, wasn't
he? Yeah, correct.
All right, so you were involved in that campaign, but what made you decide to run for yourself?
Well, I then became the president of the organization, which was called the Village Independent Democrats, and the first time I ran, which was in 1962, I ran for the assembly, and I lost. And it was probably the best thing that ever happened to me, although I thought I'd leave politics. It was, as I said then on election night, it's a dirty business, and I was back the next day. I loved public service, and if you're a lawyer in particular, you can render pro bono law service to people in need of a lawyer to prevent their being thrown out of their homes. And so I was there, and those were very exciting times. And a year later, I ran against Carmine DiSapio, who was then the most noted political person in New York City and state. He never ran for public office, only party office. But he was the head of what we call Tammany Hall,
right,
the number one Democratic political county organization. And I beat him.
Wow.
I beat him. He had been defeated 2 years before and was making a return. And the guy who defeated him left politics and didn't want to run for re-election, probably would have lost anyway. And nobody wanted to run against Carmine, and I felt it was my obligation because I was, as I said, the president of the organization. And I said, if you need a candidate, then nobody else will run. And they tried to get C.O. Bickell and a number of other prominent people, and they said, what, do you think I'm crazy? And they didn't run, and so I ran. I won by 41 votes out of about 9,000.
Just imagine
and,
that.
And then there were, he went to court and said that I won and that we had stolen the election. I mean, he was the biggest politician in America, and we were nothing. And he ran the political organizations, and I was so outraged that he would allege that we had stolen the election. So I won again, this time by 144 votes, and then the regular election came around again in 2 years later in 1965, and this time I beat him by over 500 votes, and he never ran again.
We're talking to Ed Koch, everybody, three-time mayor of New York City. Now, was that your hardest-fought political campaign, or what was your hardest-fought?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. I when I ran in 1977, I was actually six in a field of seven. I only had 4% recognition rate, and that came from the fact that I was a congressman in my own district. They knew me. But the caliber of the people who were running, you had Mario Cuomo, who ultimately became the governor of New York State, and you had Bella Abzug, who was a nationwide
national figure.
Candidate, and you had Herman Badillo, who was highly well known, and a number of others, so that very few people thought I could win. But I had David Garth as my political guru, so to speak, consultant, and he gave me credibility, and I did win. And I was very proud of that. And first time I won in the general election, I got 50% of the vote in a four-way race. Second time when I ran for re-election, I got 75%, and both the Democratic and Republican parties gave me their designation. I had to run in two contested primaries. I won both of them, the Republican and the Democratic. And then in the third election, I got 78% of the vote.
Wow.
And then in the fourth election, I lost to David Dinkins, the first black mayor of the city of New York. And once again, in retrospect, I was happy that I lost. 4 years is just too much for anybody.
Yeah,
four terms.
I can understand that. Mr. Koch, you were the mayor of the largest city in the United States when you were the mayor of New York, three-time mayor of New York. Now I want to ask you a question. Cities across the United States are facing huge financial problems. Right here in our own city of Ventura, we're faced with a $6 million shortfall. If you were running a city today, how would it be different from when you were running the city of New York back in your term?
Well, when I ran, the city was on the edge of bankruptcy.
That's right.
And we had what we called at that time a $6 billion short-term debt, meaning that every year the city had borrowed $1 billion to balance its budget, didn't repay it, and it was just rolled over. So at the end of 6 years before I became mayor, we had rolled up a debt of $6 billion.
That's billion and, with a B.
Oh, it was awful. And what we were depending on was not only doing what we had to do, which meant cutting expenses, and we did it in a very savage way because there was no alternative, and because bankruptcy destroys the city. You never or rarely recover from that, and I knew it was not our answer. So I was willing to do whatever happened, whatever was required. But we did have the assistance of the state and the federal government. In those days, it was Jimmy Carter.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately Ronald Reagan in the course of my election and being mayor. And they did help. Whereas today, the federal government is in the worst debt, trillions of dollars. And the state of New York, while it's better than the state of California, which is probably the worst state financially in the union.
That's right.
New York is pretty bad itself with its own debt, so it can't help. And that's true across the country. So municipalities have a very tough time balancing their budgets today. Nobody wants to pay increased taxes, although sometimes that makes sense for a short term, but nobody wants to pay it. And therefore, the major way you balance your budget is simply to end services. And that's very, very badly impacting, particularly on poor people.
Absolutely. We're talking to Ed Koch, everybody, three-time mayor of New York City. Now, under your mayoralty, the crime in New York City actually decreased during your three terms there. What was the major reason for that, do you think?
Well, you know, crime decreases during difficult times. I don't know where the criminals go, but somehow or other, there is less crime during recessions and depressions. That's number one. Secondly, crime in the beginning in my administration, particularly when the crack epidemic came in 1984, went up, particularly because the number of cops went down. We went down from a high of about 30,000 or so cops down to 22,000 cops, which is still a large army, certainly compared with what you have in L.A. and what they have in Chicago and so forth. But it was at the end of the term that it started to decline. But the real declines took place under Giuliani, who followed David Dinkins and who put in new systems. And crime went down. But what is fascinating is that it went down over 30% after Giuliani left and Mayor Bloomberg took over, and he's not a law enforcement person. He's hired very good people. Ray Kelly is our current police commissioner, superb. And crime is so way down, we're the number one large city that's safe in America, according to FBI statistics, the safest large city in America.
Wow. Well, that's good to hear. And thank you for that honest appraisal. I appreciate that very much. Now, you're a champion of lesbian and gay rights in New York. You signed the Lesbian and Gay Rights Ordinance in 1986, which was a controversial stand at the time. In what ways did signing that ordinance improve the lives of New York citizens?
Well, the first thing is that when I came in 1978, I issued an executive order prohibiting discrimination by government against anyone on the basis of sexual orientation, that applied to all governmental operations in education, housing, so forth. But it could not, under the law, apply to the private sector. That required the city council to enact it.
Uh-huh.
And we tried desperately to get legislation enacted, but the majority leader, so-called, normally that would be called the speaker today, but then called the majority leader, refused. He was a very religious man, and he would not allow the legislation to be voted on. But when he left office, and the new prospective speaker, majority leader, wanted my support, I said, only if you allow a vote. You don't have to vote for it if it's against your morality, but to allow a vote. And he said that he would, and he kept his commitment. And then I went to every member of the council who we thought would want to vote for it, but was afraid in their constituency that they would lose, whether they were Republicans or Democrats. I said to them, if you support the legislation, vote for it, and if your opponent, whether it be a Democrat or a Republican in the primary or in the general, uses your vote against you, I will be supportive of you in the primary and in the general election. And I was a very popular mayor at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were able to put together a large majority of the council who voted for it. Now, what did it mean for people who were gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender? It meant that you could not be discriminated against in getting an apartment. Before that, if someone didn't want to rent to you, they didn't have to.
Right.
Now it was against the law. If someone discriminated in employment, it was against the law. You could get damages. And we now have a city that overwhelmingly, occasionally you will have an abuse by somebody and a hate crime, but overwhelmingly this is a city that is very accepting of people without regard in any way to their sexual orientation.
Absolutely. A very tolerant city. We're talking to Ed Koch, everybody, the three-time mayor of New York City. We're going to have to take a break to pay some bills here, but I want to tease the audience before we go to break. And you describe yourself as a liberal with sanity.
Correct.
Which is kind of an interesting description of yourself. But you have some interesting stands, particularly on the death penalty. So when we come back from this break, I'd love to hear your stands on the death penalty, because you and I might be on different sides of the coin on that one. We'll be back after this short break.
Now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What? Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Billy the Brain. You're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday, 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock here on KKZZ AM 1400. My very special guest today is Ed Koch, three-time mayor of New York City. And before we went to break, we were talking about his characterization of himself as a liberal who came to his senses. And he and I might have a little bit difference of opinion on this, because you have a very unusual stance on the death penalty, Mr. Koch. What is that?
I don't think it's unusual. I think at one time it was a majority. It may still be, but it is losing ground, regrettably. First, I want to say that I call myself, since 1973, a liberal with sanity, and that is to convey that I'm not an ideologue. I will examine every issue on the merits, and sometimes people who consider themselves to be liberals are upset with the position I come to, and it's not only on the issue of the death penalty. Now, the reason I have and continue to support the death penalty is because I think that there are some, a small number, of criminal cases where the action of the defendant that caused the penalty to be imposed is so outrageous that only the death penalty is fitting. I'll give you an illustration that someone who rapes, tortures a woman or an infant in particular, and then kills them, to me, that requires the death penalty. It's not often that you would impose it, but I believe there are times where the crime is so egregious. Now, there are people who say, well, you know, it's so unable to remedy it once you've imposed it, supposing you make a mistake. So I say two things. One, yes, a mistake could be made, but I believe society's rights are paramount. And secondly, I don't know of a single case where the editorial writers and the criminal experts have concluded that there is a single case in the United States, there are elsewhere, where someone who was executed was ultimately established to be innocent. There are lots of people who have had the death penalty imposed, but before they were executed on appeal, they were exonerated. But I don't know of a single case where someone was actually executed where it was beyond doubt established that they were not guilty.
Well, you make some good points, especially about heinous crimes that are so egregious that you need to take some action. And I would agree with you. There are some absolutely heinous crimes out there. You mentioned rape and torture of children and women. That has to be there. But I am opposed to the death penalty, not so much because of the penalty or even the fear of the innocent man being put to death. I'm more of an opponent of it because of the financial implications.
Yes, it does cost. It costs probably $1 million for the trial. Nevertheless, when you have cop killers who are sent away and then ultimately available for parole, it's just infuriating. And I understand your position. You understand my position. Regrettably, your position is in the ascendancy, so that, for example, in New York State, we don't have the death penalty anymore. It's never been taken off the books, but a court has struck it down as violative of the Constitution in some form. But I'm sorry about that, and the state legislature is not going to correct it, and there we are. Now, what's improved the situation is that we now have laws that say no parole, that life means really life. That ameliorates it to a great extent that you don't have the death penalty, but I still support it in certain minimal number of cases, but egregious.
Absolutely. And that's the beautiful thing about this country, is that we can have an open and honest discussion about this, be on different sides of the issue, but still at the end walk away understanding what the other person's point of view is. That's what's great. Now, during your mayoralty, you did have some other interesting and controversial things. I'm going to refer back to 1987. The Giants had just won the Super Bowl. And, of course, they were no longer playing in New York at that time. They were playing East Rutherford. And you took a stand against the Victory Parade in New York City. Now, what was that all about?
Why should we be spending $1 million, because that's what a parade costs, a ticker tape parade, with the overtime of the cops and sanitation? Why should we be spending $1 million on a team that has no connections with New York City? Now, we spent several times more than $1 million on a ticker tape parade for a winning New York team. When I first came into office in 78, we extolled the Yankees, who had won the World Series, and we had a parade. The New York Times said, oh, don't do it, Mayor, it costs too much. And I said, New York Times, you have your head screwed on wrong. We're going to do it because the people deserve a moment in time where they can feel good about themselves, and every day is so bad because of our financial situation.
That's interesting that you would bring up the 1978. Of course, you know that the Yankees beat the Dodgers in that, so you're just rubbing salt in the wound. But thank you. Our special guest is Ed Koch, everybody. He is the 3-time mayor of New York City. And I want to ask you, you have hobnobbed with all of the greats, both political, business, and so forth. But of all the politicians with whom you've associated, who are some of the most memorable ones for you and why?
Well, I'll give you someone who is not resident or citizen of the United States. I believe the single greatest statesman that I have ever met was Anwar Sadat of Egypt.
Ah.
And I met with him in his home in Alexandria, and I said to the American ambassador after I had spoken, I was then a congressman, and I said to the American ambassador, is he for real? And he said, we're trying to figure that out. But he was for real. I have to make a correction. I was mayor when I went to see him. I had been in that area when I was a congressman, but I had not seen him. That would be someone from the outside. The greatest politician, public official in the United States, I thought, is someone who is still underappreciated, and that is former Governor Hugh Carey.
Really?
He was incredible, and he understood the problems of the city and the state, and the one person who saved financially the city and the state was Hugh Carey. And I've been working for a long time to try to get something meaningful named for him, and I hope that we'll be successful.
Oh, well, good for you. That is interesting. That's breaking news here on Billy the Brain, so I appreciate that. Now, you're also known, Ed Koch, for your role in the 1988 presidential campaign for your public criticism of Democratic candidate Jesse Jackson, who had just won 2 major primaries in March and was running even at that point with Michael Dukakis. What was the crux of your criticism?
That his campaigning prior to running and running was hostile to the state of Israel, which I was then and am supportive of. Since that time, Jesse Jackson and I have become quite good friends, and I think he's changed his position on Israel to a great extent. But in those days, he was saying things that I thought were outrageous, and I said so. What I said at that time that got everybody crazy was Jews would be crazy to vote for Jesse Jackson in the same way that blacks would be crazy to vote for George H.W., that's the first Bush, because of a certain hostility that had been exhibited by both of those people towards both of those groups. And people said, they concentrated only on the Jews would be crazy. They didn't care about the second. Blacks would be similarly vis-a-vis George H.W. Bush.
Interesting.
And I don't regret the statement. I thought it was accurate then. But as I say, Jesse and I subsequently became, I would say, good friends. And we were on a television show just by accident together. And we exhibited that. It became very touchy-feely.
No.
Every time I would say something, I put my hand on his hand. Every time he would say something, he put his hand on my hand. So everybody enjoyed the performance.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. We're talking to Ed Koch, everybody, former mayor of New York. Now, how would you characterize your relationship with the Reverend Al Sharpton?
Well, it happens to be a very good one. When in 78 he came to City Hall and he sat down because I wouldn't sign a petition that said all summer jobs given to the city by the federal government, of which there were 60,000 and 120,000 youngsters that signed up for them, that all of these jobs should only be given to blacks. And I said, nothing doing. We're going to give it in equal proportions, letting a computer randomly select the people, and we're not going to assign only to blacks. And he said also, you must sign a statement that you support reparations to the extent of $50 billion for the black community. I said, why don't you leave it, let me look at it, and I'll send you a note, rather than have a confrontation with him. He said, no, you don't sign, we sit down. So I said, you can't do that. You can pick it outside, but you can't prevent people from going in and out of my office. He said, we will. So I said to the cop, remove him. And the cop says to me, what if they resist? I said, have you never heard the word arrest? Arrest them. So they were arrested, and then I got letters from every member of the New York congressional delegation. How can you arrest a black minister? I said, if a black minister violates the law, you arrest him like as someone who is not a minister. And then, with the passage of years, appeared on a number of platforms together, joining in support of some civil rights legislation. And he would always say to the audience, you know, this man pointing at me made me famous. He had me arrested, made me famous. And then he said, and this was the kicker, he said, but he never stopped talking to me. And he was very proud of that, and so was I.
Good for you. Good for you. I can't believe how quickly the time has gone. We're talking to Ed Koch, everybody. One final question. There's probably no greater cheerleader for the city of New York than you. What does New York mean to you?
Well, this great city has given me and millions of others an opportunity to rise based on our individual skills and abilities and competence. And I owe it so much, and so many others have the same debt of gratitude, that we can't do enough to repay.
Well said. I thank you for being our guest, Ed Koch, former mayor of New York City, three-time mayor of New York City. It has been a real privilege to have you on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And our theme today is making the tough decisions. Both of our guests have made the tough decisions, and you've heard their stories here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. Tomorrow is going to be Ethereal Thursday. We're going to be taking a look at two very interesting topics. My first guest is going to be Lisa Miller. She has written the definitive book on heaven and our enduring fascination with the afterlife. And immediately following Lisa, we're going to have Dr. Mark Pitstick, who is going to be telling us that he has got incontrovertible proof the existence of the human soul. And so we'll be discussing that as well. I figured the two of them together, we've got Mark telling us that we have a soul, and Lisa's telling us where the soul is going to go in the afterlife. It's going to be a pretty dynamic show. So stay tuned for that. That will be Ethereal Thursday tomorrow. And that brings us to the end of another of our shows. You've been listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. Join us every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ AM 1400, or streaming on my new website, brainstormingonline.com. Coming up next is Leading Your Inspired Life with Susan Burrell. We end the show by saying, go out there and be the change you want to see in the world. Remember, the leaders of the past didn't hold with today's conventions, and neither will the leaders of tomorrow. Join us tomorrow for Ethereal Thursday.